that's too fucking bad, isn't it? I like that. I read this thing on the internet and it pissed me off, and it said that I was on my deathbed and that I could barely teach. Excuse me, why are these people always killing me on the internet? What did I ever do to them? Right? Oh, I didn't die. Excuse me. I went into the hospital. I should have died, and they were going to be big shots and stuff. You know, and then there, and I've done it over and over and over again. I keep getting these fatal diseases and I lose them. I misplace everything. Pencils, you know, socks, fatal diseases, you know. But see, I believe in spontaneous remission. I have studied over and over and over again things like, for example, when I found out every drug was tested against placebos, I went, ooh, look at all we know about placebos. So I went and went through all the research about placebos and started deliberately giving them out, showing people. I had put together a booklet. I had Robert Dilts work on it, and he was a grad student, or what we call a slave. And he went out, and I had him get all this research, and we put it all into a booklet, and we wanted to put out a product, and it was called Placebo. And it had a little book, and so you'd look up headaches, and it would show you, given all the research that's out there, 8 out of 10 times, a placebo works as well as aspirin. So take 11 just to be sure. The FDA wouldn't let us put this out. Is this not the goofiest thing? They said, well, they only work because people are deceived. If they know about it, then it's not going to work. And I said, well, wait a minute. I said, actually, your research is all fucked up because these people know they're either getting the real drug or a placebo. So half of them are going, who are getting the placebos think they're getting real drugs, but a lot of the people getting real drugs think they're getting placebos, so they're actually impairing the drug. I like to say, I had a doctor who gave me a drug. While he's giving it to me, he goes, we're going to try this. And he goes, it only works maybe 50% of the time. And I said, is that before dark or after dark? And he said, no, in some people as opposed to others. And I said, well, I don't want the others. I'll just be the first some, if it's okay. And he said, you just don't understand that sometimes things like this won't work on you. Yes, I understand. That's called an embedded command where I come from. But they force doctors to do informed consent in this country. Those of you who are doctors, hear me well. They make you do informed consent because of insurance so that you, yes, every operation has some danger. So, you know, they take out your molar and knock you out for 2 seconds. You might die from the anesthetic. And the fact that you have to tell people that does not mean you have to tell them congruently. So when you tell them something, always make sure that you are incongruent appropriately. They go, I have to tell you that there's some danger in this. You know, and it might not work. It might even have side effects. Or it might totally work for you. In fact, I like to tell my clients that if they stare at the box, it can become highly effective, especially if they plan that between 3 and 4 o'clock every night, they will engage in spontaneous remission. Whether they're awake or not doesn't matter. Okay, as long as when you go to bed, how many of you, when you go to bed, set the alarm and wake up before it goes off? Look at how many people have their hands up. Isn't that wild? That means you can program your brain to do something while you're asleep. Cool, huh? But all you plan to do is wake up in the morning? What a waste. That's like having a magic wand and the only thing you do is open a door that's unlocked. You already have an alarm to wake you up. You don't need something for that. It's like I have the key to an unlocked door. Or one of my favorites is when people get totally excited and they don't really realize what they're saying. And I had a little contest in a group. I said, look, I'm going to give away one session where I'm going to let somebody ask for any fucking thing they want. And if I can do it, I will. And there are things I can do. You can really let your imagination run away with you. And they all looked at that. I put a number on every ticket. And then I pulled out of the bowl one of the things. And I read the number. And this guy jumped up and he went, I won, I won. I want to win. And I said, well, you got what you wanted. Could ask for anything. And he asked for something that he already had. Seems so stupid to me. And he went, no, I want something else. And I said, well, then you'll have to enter another contest, won't you? You know, I mean, to me, it's like people say, I say, what do you want? And they go, well, I don't want to feel bad. And I go, okay, but seems like suicide's kind of a radical solution, but I'll kill you. It's okay. People say, I want to lose 40 pounds. I go, put your right arm on the table. Get out a big axe. When I walk over, they go, well, wait a minute. And they say, well, you said you wanted to lose it. Right? They don't say that. See, to me, when I say, well, if you were 40 pounds lighter, what the hell difference would it make? And they go, well, then I'd be happy. And I go, sure. No, you'd just be cranky. You know, believe me, I know. All you have to do is be in any restaurant, right? And you're all these nicely dressed people in the restaurant and stuff. And they push out that dessert cart. And every woman's eyes in the place go, tsh. Say, guys, you want to be attractive to women? Stand in front of the dessert cart. The hell with this bodybuilding stuff, man. You know, stand by the dessert cart, and you will become a very popular guy. But what did they do? Look at that, and they go, oh, I could never have that. I might not look like I'm an underage boy. I mean, to me, I look in magazines. I'm really offended by this. They're starting to try and make it so that men are attracted, you know, to women who look like they haven't gone through puberty yet. And to me, I think that this is not only ridiculous, it's dangerous above and beyond everything else that we're trying to make see, models were skinny because designers wanted them to look like a coat hanger so you'd pay attention to the clothes instead of the model. And somewhere along the line, people started going, that's what beauty is. Uh-uh. Beauty is whatever it is that you look at that makes you feel good, not what you look at and you go, oh, I could never be that way. And, you know, ladies, if you look at another woman and go, I could never be that skinny, don't try, okay? You can be as beautiful as you want to be. And believe me, when it comes to attractiveness, all you have to do is to learn to aim your pheromone gun. Oh, you didn't know you could do that deliberately? We'll build a meter in later, right? I build in a thing so you can zero in by the person. There's 100,000 combinations in men and 100,000 in women, and when the two line up, it's based on a shape. Floats through the air, drops in the slot. All you have to do is adjust yourself so you know which slot you're aiming at and carry a little fan with you. I do it all the time, you know. You'd be surprised. I work with couples. I get them to line that up, and then I just take my little fan and go like that, and you can watch their faces change. We'll do it a little later. I just wanted to get back to this psychiatrist. So here is this psychiatrist and Louise Parker having this conversation. And he's trying to figure out, okay. And I'm pressing the question. I go, okay, good. Now, fix me. Help me. I said, because every time I try to make a picture of myself, I become psychotic and violent. And very, very afraid. I fall on the ground. I roll around. And then I jump up and hurt the person next to me. And I sit down in the chair. And I said, I'm so glad that you've actually worked with Richard Bandler personally and will be able to do this, I said, because I've tried to get people to help me with this before. And they always have this dumbfounded look on their face. And that's the difference between getting the technique mixed up with the subject. You see, the phobia cure that says you do make a picture of yourself, right, in a situation where you're normally terrified. So you've already disassociated. You see yourself being afraid. And then if you float out and see yourself watching yourself be afraid, and then you turn the slide into a movie and you move everything backwards. You start at the end and move to the beginning because you naturally with memories don't do that. You remember your memories forward. But when you remember them backwards, it neurologically flattens out the charge in it just because you don't do it. And then it won't run forwards by itself. Now, if you add a little circus music in, I find that that just makes it so it's silly because you can't switch anything to nothing. You need to change it to something else. And the best thing to do is to change it to something that's pleasant. When people see themselves being afraid of a phobia of heights, and they laugh, and they see themselves walk backwards, talk backwards, but also what they're seeing is the following. They're seeing themselves go from fear to not fear. Remember the planes fly over the city, suck the flames up, right? Go back to the airport, unload the bombs, ship them back to the U.S., dismantle them in factories, and bury the elements in the ground. So they can never hurt anybody again. Vonnegut's book where there was a war movie, suddenly it became a peace movie when it ran backwards. But the same thing is true for human beings. As you run your memories backwards, it takes all of the power out of it. So if there are things that you constantly think about that bother you or frighten you, start at the end and run towards the beginning. Do it really fast, like a Charlie Chaplin movie. And play a little circus music. And you'll discover it's not the same. Because when you make it not the same, it won't be. Then run it forwards and have it be the way you want it to be. Right? Now, if it's going up in an elevator, don't make it too dramatic. Because I made one guy so that he thought it was just hysterical. Right? You know that thing where you're with somebody and you're walking along and you start laughing? Right? And then you get to go into a serious situation and you can't. And you look at each other and go... Right? Think of a time that happened to you. Right? Go back and remember it. See what you saw at the time. Hear what you heard. And remember the event just as if you were there. And when the feeling comes up inside you that makes you want to laugh, as the feeling comes up, I want to ask you the following question. Where does it start? And when it builds all the way up, where does it go when it goes away? Because people are always telling me, well, you know, I only have fleeting happiness, but then it goes away. Well, where does it go when it goes away? If you want to be happy longer, then you have to know how to make your feelings stick around or build up. If you don't have enough joy in your life, then you have to know how to make it stronger. So before we go to lunch, let's do this one. We're going to do some tantric NLP. I went up and throttled this guy in India till he told me his secrets. And we're going to use one of them. Right? So I want you to take the feeling. Now, when you get the feeling in your body, where does it start? Can you remember being in that silly situation? How many of you can remember? Okay. If you can't remember, this is that silly situation. And when you feel embarrassed, then where does the embarrassment start? Okay. Does it start in your stomach, your toes, your back, and your head? Where does it start? When you have feelings, where do they start? Some of you, just tell me. It's not the same in everybody. Okay. Somebody said their face, right? Okay. Who said their face? That's not your face, is it? I said, who said your face? Yes, ma'am. Okay, yours starts here in front. But when I said, who said your face, that's not you. That means wait, okay? We'll get back to you. You have to make a distinction, because if you get your chest and your face mixed up, you can have some serious problems, you know? it's that thing, you know, like when the doctor walks up and you take the stethoscope and put it on your forehead, you won't get any heartbeat. But if you scream real loud on the way up, you can get a really wild reaction. But ma'am, so it starts in your face. Okay. Okay. And then where does it go? Down. That's good. If it didn't, you'd be in deep shit. And then what happens? Does it go any lower or just stay there or what? Goes to your stomach. And then? Then where does it go when it goes away? Does it go back in the reverse order or does it go out somewhere? Where? I know it's a tough question, but it just goes out through the skin everywhere? See, think of a time, because it all works the same way. Think of a time when you were really having fun. You were doing something wonderful, something you had to lie about. I do get the A-plus for the questions, don't I? I can sit down to somebody next to him in the bar, and in 4 seconds into the conversation, they're looking at me like, oh, my God, I never thought about that. Well, it's just that, to me, when you ask questions, you should be getting something that's useful information. If I said, now, why are you embarrassed? That's not useful information, because I don't give a damn. You know, the cause of something isn't anything. That's a theory. But if I find out where things go, then, see, there's a really neat thing. Because, like, for example, if you don't want a feeling and you know where it goes when it goes away, you can get rid of it. And if you know, right, where it goes away, then just before it does, you can loop it back to the beginning and build it up. This means that you get to, what would be the word? Run your own life. It's a concept, you know. It's a theory, or else it's something you really do. See, people come up and try and make me feel ashamed. Can you imagine? I could never do this if I had shame. I'm a shameless hussy. The people come up and they go, well, it really makes me feel bad, you know, that you feel like, you know, that you have to use such, well, shall we say, disgusting language. And even the word disgusting I like. Just the way it trips off your tongue. It's like the word Zimbabwe. I love that word. I can just say that over and over again. Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe. It's like if I was, I go, God, what a shitty name for a country, the United States. You know, I want a name like that that rolls off the tongue, that makes you want to go there. It's like, as soon as you say Zimbabwe, it sounds like the country. You know, it makes you want to dance with a spear, kill white people, you know? It's that thing, like every time I hear bagpipes, you know, it makes me want to kill an Englishman. And, which is a problem, because there's so many of them everywhere. You know, it's like, and they don't know it's coming. It's like they'll say, you know, we'll put a little music on, and they put on bagpipe music, and I go, you know, and I'm sitting there at dinner, and they hand me a sharp knife, you know. Here, let me take that butter knife and give you a steak knife. And I go, thank you, but I'm not having steak. And they go, oh, that was an accident. And I go, nothing's an accident. This is Earth Coincidence Control Center. Now, and you, sir, the one that started in your chest, what's your name? Good. That's right. Just checking. Well, if you get your face and your chest mixed up, you can't be too careful. Well, I learn people's names by looking at their name tags so much that every time I meet people, I stare at their left tit, you know. People always, they're always doing this, like, is there something on my shirt, you know, and I go, well, now when you say your name, I put a name tag on you no matter who the hell you are. And so, you know, if you get it wrong, then it's wrong for life, because once I make a mistake, I stick with it. You know, I went to college, and if you're going to be wrong, you have to defend it to the death. In one of my books, I found out I had something backwards. And when I announced that it was backwards, somebody said, but you said in your book. And I said, well, I was wrong. That book was written 20 years ago, and that was the current thought at the time, and I figured out that it was just backwards, that the dominant hemisphere and the non-dominant hemisphere, that in terms of where consciousness is, it just doesn't work that way. And that if creativity is where you move things around, then it's not going to be in the non-dominant hemisphere. That's memorized pictures. That's, you know, remembered fairy tales. All the creative syntax is in the other hemisphere. So all those people going, well, I'm trying to get into my right hemisphere, are headed in the wrong direction. Besides, it's much better if you just use the whole brain, especially the old brain functions. People are not into those, and they're the fun ones. Those are the ones where you don't think, you just snarl. That sort of thing. You know, by the way, guys, try this. Flare your nostrils, go like that. No, not the bunny rabbit one, the other one. You flare your nostrils, another part of your body moves, doesn't it? You know why? Because they're right next to each other on the motor cortex. Now, what this means is you can stimulate one part of things with another. For example, artificially, smile. Three times, go. And right next on the cortex is the same thing that releases serotonin. So if you do that, suddenly you get a little serotonin and your brain begins to cool down. Then all you have to do is use the diaphragm in a deep laugh. Go, ha, 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 ha. Try it. Do it once more. Go, ha, 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 ha. And you get endomorphemes. Suddenly you feel a little differently, don't you? And that's just artificially. Imagine if you did it for real. Now, imagine if it started to get out of control. You never know. So you're started in your chest, right? Okay, and then where did it go? In and down. Yes, and then what? Up and back out where? To your chest, and then? It went forward out of you, and then it went away. Okay, try something. I want you to go back in, think of this time where you felt really silly, put it in, let it go in and down. By the way, did it ever get below the waist? Oh, good. You'll find there's a lot of good stuff down there. This time, what I want you to do is have it go in, down, but when it comes up, just before it comes out, I want you to pull it right back in and start to loop it round and round until it fills your whole body. Okay? Go ahead, do it now. That's right. Spin it faster, though. Even faster. That's right. Now, what I want you to do is keep it spinning faster and faster till you begin to hear it whirl. Now, what I want you to do while you keep that spinning is I want you to think about all the serious things that you have to feel bad about in your life. Hey, 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 you know, all the things that give you low self-esteem. Hey, you know, there are people here suffering. Have you ever felt inadequate? Have you ever hesitated to try something you should? Have you ever felt less than other people? And in the future, when you think about feeling bad, I want you to consider going to therapy. And if somebody says to you, and how do you feel about that? Hey, now think about your personal problems. Well, I guess that's done. But by the same token, you know where your feelings went when they went away, right? Okay, now, there have been times, and there are people who can do things like parents, relatives, bosses, neighbors, bullies, you know, women that think they're better than other people, you know. I love to walk up to the women that just have that attitude, and I walk right up to them and step past them and ask the one next to them to dance. Or I like to walk up to the one that just thinks they're the queen's ass and say, could you introduce me to your friend? She's so beautiful, and she doesn't have an attitude problem. And then I always tell him, you know, you can get that fixed. And it's cheaper than plastic surgery. Okay, now, so, you know, when it came out the front? Okay, now I want you to think of a time that you know is going to happen again because there's somebody who's able to get to you, right? And I want you to take it. And the minute you go back, I want you to see what you saw the last time they made you feel bad. And the minute it builds up, I want you to just go, shoot it right out the front. Cool, huh? See, if you're going to feel bad, that's okay. But just for this long. And then I want you to repeat the mantra, shut the fuck up. And then go inside and remember. That's okay. It's only hypnosis, and hypnosis doesn't exist. So therefore, post-hypnotic suggestions don't exist. All of you who had that clock, right? You could go inside and say, wake me up from a totally unconscious sleep at 8 in the morning. And you're... and you wake up, right? That's called post-hypnotic suggestion. All right, now, we learn strategies for that, and then we can teach other people to wake up by the clock in NLP. But design human engineering, we ask the following question. How can we go fucking hog wild with this? How about we set the clock and have our unconscious begin to create a wonderful new feeling? Think of all the feelings you've had. You missed all the chemical combinations in between, and there's a few faucets you guys haven't turned on. For example, you're all committing a crime right now because it is illegal in the U.S. to have a plant where you manufacture LSD. And every one of you is doing it in your head right now. Now, if you just made a little more, the colors will get brighter, you'll begin to hear more, and everything will seem a little funnier. And then you'll begin to notice things like I do all the time when people say things, because I love this. Here I am on the plane flying along, and they, you know, they come by and try and poison you on a regular basis. But, you know, I mean, it's just, I always look at it and I go, well, exactly what is this? And they go, well, it tastes like chicken. Mm-hmm. Sure it does. No chicken. And by the way, you know that Colonel Sanders chicken place? I've never seen a chicken that small. Have you? And then I noticed there's always pigeons on the top of these places. See, I put things together, right? President Bush went into the hospital and had a cancerous polyp removed from his ass. And Dan Quayle went in 2 weeks later and had one removed from his nose. And I begin to see a pattern here. Now, I began to ask the question, how can people feel bad about something for a long time? You know what they do? Exactly what I had you do. They keep spinning it around instead of shooting it out. See, the thing is if this is not something you do deliberately. Now, I went one step further. I went, okay, Leslie, I know you weren't telling the truth. That Mr. LeCron, there are other things in the control panel. How about we begin to build a panel so that we make a button that says enough is enough. So you hit the button, right? Like, wouldn't it be neat if you had a little red button in your mind now, right? Oops, there it is. I don't use hypnosis, just demonology. That's okay. They work for me. They're real nice guys, and they've been around a lot longer than the devil. They made that devil stuff up, you know, and that, you know, and they tried to undermine the old gods of the Celts and stuff, the horned ones and all the things that had to do with fucking. Since they weren't going to fuck, they didn't want anybody else to fuck. Like Christianity used to have reincarnation in it, and they discovered that this was not good for controlling people. So they literally got together, and the College of the Cardinals decided, and they took it out. They said, because they couldn't motivate people. They had to get people working for joy in the afterlife. Otherwise, they couldn't exploit them through their whole life. So they literally made a decision at one point. Did you know that there's a pope that had a miscarriage? Doesn't sound quite right, does it? Right. Well, it turned out one of them was actually a woman, disguised as a man. But when she had a miscarriage, it sort of gave it away. And, you know, that all of this stuff about, you see, the Catholics, they ought to learn. They ought to read a little history, you know, learn some of this stuff. There used to be like two centers, and there was Constantinople, so there were pairs of popes. And there was even a pope that when he found out what would bring Armageddon about, because there's one of the things in there is it says that, you know, there'll be five popes in a row who in numerology, their names will come out to 666. So he switched his name to something that would be 666. And made sure that the ones after him were lined up. He actually got three in a row, and then there was a war or something, and somebody couldn't count right. But he was trying to bring Armageddon about, and somebody should have told him, it's not in the Old Testament. They made that up later, and all that stuff's nonsense, and it's bad translations. You know what it says in the Hebrew Bible in the beginning? It doesn't say anything about the shadow of the blah, blah, blah moved across the waters of the deep. It said God farted. It says God passed wind, right? But, you know, it's like that, you know, the universe beginning as a gaseous substance. Well, there's a certain amount of truth to that we know now. But thinking about it as, you know, as a divine, just, you know, it's kind of hard to collect money when you do that. And I really have an aversion to these guys that are out there collecting money so that they'll talk to God for you. By the way, you can go yourself and talk to all kinds of them that will answer, but if you've got to give somebody money to go for you, you know, I have a recommendation. The term is hit him. Because when they start pulling that crap with me, they don't come to my door and ask for money, I'll tell you that. I may have given up being Jewish, but not entirely. And, you know, because I like that when they come up and they go, well, you know, and I will go and talk to God. And I go, yeah, me, I talked to him just this morning. He mentioned you. He's very angry. In fact, they all are. And so tonight, just so that you'll stop this, I'm going to send somebody by to discuss it with you. Don't worry. They always go, about what? And I go, there's something to worry about. You'll know what it is when the sun sets. By the way, do you have a pentagram? No, I would never have a symbol of the devil. And I go, it's not his symbol. Five-pointed star, that's the Masons, isn't it? They're not demonic, but they think it is in England now. They think that the Masons are some demonic organization. And unfortunately, they don't understand. The demons have been around for a long time. There are all kinds of them, you know, and high demon magic was done by Solomon. The Jews still use it in the Defense Department. So there must be a little bit to it, right? They know how to call demons out and do things. Ask the Arabs. 300 million Arabs got their ass kicked by 3 million Jews. They had to have help from somebody, you know. And there are all kinds of things. In World War II, there are reports over and over and over again of all kinds of weird-ass stuff going on. And do people report it and dwell on it? Do you guys remember in the news just recently, there was a statue in a Hindu temple that began to drink milk? Right, and they thought it, and the more milk they poured in it, and so they thought there had to be a hole in it or something. And they showed it on CNN. There were hundreds of people lined up, thousands of them, buying milk and feeding the statue. And they went, tried to prove that it was a fraud, and then it broke out everywhere. Statues in Hindu temples all over the world were suddenly, Ganesh was drinking milk, right? And I saw this on CNN, and I haven't heard anything about it since. Does that strike you as odd? I mean, one little Christian miracle, and they're jamming it down our throat because somebody saw, you know, the Virgin Mary, you know, in a milk bottle outside their house. And here, you know, there's gods drinking milk, you know, into marble statues at CNN. They have reporters all over the world reporting this, filming it. And then they go, well, that's over. Let's move on to the next thing. Who's the president fucking? You know? I want to know what happened to the statues, you know? You know? I mean, this strikes me as a religious thing that's important. By the way, there are more Hindus than there are Christians, and I'm grateful for that. Christians are too quick on the draw to kill people. You know, they're always going, we're the right Christians, you're the wrong Christians, so we're going to kill you. Excuse me, read the book, okay? When it says turn the other cheek, it doesn't mean with a sword. And by the way, it actually says that, you know, doesn't say anything about killing anyone because it says it was just kind of specific about who. It's like it doesn't even say in the Old Testament, you know, that, you know, shalt not commit adultery. It says thou shalt not fornicate with thy neighbor's wife. It's very specific because that can get you in trouble. You know, if you're going to do that, you go like into the next village where you won't get caught. And it says thou shalt not steal from people of your tribe. Doesn't say anything about anybody else's. I mean, we have to take these things with, I think, a grain of salt, because to me, these were incantations for people to survive in the desert thousands of years ago. They didn't know about trigonosis. That's why they didn't eat pork. Now that we know about it, you just cook it a little bit more and it won't hurt you. But they did keep track of the fact that pork killed people. They didn't know why, but they kept track of things enough that the old shaman knew people who eat that dead, people who not eat that alive. So, here, you don't eat that, and oh, you've dropped by for a council meeting, we're going to have peace plans, here, let's have some pork. You like bacon? Oh, you like it raw? Good. History of culture, this country here, we killed American Indians and slaughtered them. We gave them blankets with smallpox on them. I mean, that's hideous. Actually, it wasn't us, it was the English, because we were the English then. Of course, not me, my people didn't get here until a lot later. We got here in World War II, running from another country, slaughtering people. The Swiss, apparently. I thought they were neutral. No, as it turns out, well, I already knew they weren't neutral because my grandfather told me that when he escaped from Germany and went to the Swiss border, they stole everything he had, tried to turn him over to the SS, and he knew that they were, well, let's just say they're not neutral. But they stole and stole and stole. And then the Swiss guy that found all the records in the bank, delineating all the stuff, you know what happened? He saw Schindler's List. And then he went and found all the stuff in front of the shredder. And he took it all and gave it to the proper authorities. He is now the first person to be given exile from Switzerland in the U.S. He had to take his whole family and leave because they considered him a traitor for telling the truth. Tells you something about the world. And people go, hey, it's all right as long as you don't get caught. No, it's not. If you do bad things and you don't get caught, you'll never feel good. It's just that simple. And we don't need to teach ethics because of anything other than if you really want to feel good most of the time in your life, the trick is just do the right thing for the right reason. So simple. You know, and when you really feel right, start laughing because you're probably not. You know, and when you yell at somebody for stupid reasons, you know, how many of you have had all-night meaningful conversations and when the sun was coming up, it dawned on you, you could have been fucking. All too often, well, the next time, shut up, you know, and just say something like, I'm sorry, you know, because probably you should, you know, and if you did, then you don't have to do it anymore. The only thing that stops things is stopping it. You want to stop smoking? Don't put cigarettes in your mouth, okay? They go, but it's hard. No, it's really easy once you make the decision, because you've made decisions and stuck by them your whole life. You've made good decisions and you've made bad ones. Stop right now. Think of a decision you made, something you bought. You bought it, you're delighted with it, and you've always been happy with it. Even if you don't have it anymore, when you think about it, you're still happy. Right? And then think about something that you bought and you wish you didn't. If you have any questions about that, check your garage. Look in your closet or that storage shed that you have to have because you haven't got enough room for them in your house. And I will make the following claim. If you think about one and think about the other, when you look at them in your mind, their pictures aren't in the same place. you used a totally different method to make one decision as opposed to another. And in the future, if you label them in your mind right now, which one is which, when you go to make a decision, if it isn't in the good one, don't do it. You'd be surprised. I took an investment commodities player from Chicago here who was doing pretty good, but when we got him to stop making bad decisions, he was breaking the bank at Monte Carlo, let me tell you. I wanted him to make investments for me, but I found out the minimum unit of investment he made was $100,000. I almost died of a heart attack. He said, well, you know, I should have bought 10 units of this, and he said, because it's really going through the ceiling. And I said, how much is a unit? And he went, $100,000. And I went, $100,000? You can't buy a smaller unit? Can we get like a $20 one? Maybe a $100 one? And he looked at me and went, no, only $100,000 units. And I went, gee, that's a shame. I said, because he was, when I got done, I worked with him once. He came back a year later because he'd done so much better that he wanted to fix any little tiny pieces. That now he was picking every single time the right things, but he wasn't convinced enough that he bought as many as he should. And when he showed me how that systematically he had picked the right things, because the commodity market is like 93 lose, 7% win, right? And this guy went from, you know, kind of 50-50 to actually in the past year having not missed a single time, right? And I mean, he checks all this stuff. He reads all this stuff and watches the papers and everything. And I mean, I didn't even know you could buy futures markets on some of this stuff. I mean, to me, it was like, first time I tried to play the futures market, I forgot about it, and somebody wanted to deliver 25,000 tons of sugar beets to my house. You know, I was used to buying stock. I didn't know about that part of it. I said, and the guy said, look, I got a truck. Where should I take them? And I said, oh, and the guy said, and what's your name? And I said, Grinder, John Grinder. So then I got a call later, and he said, look, he says these aren't his. And I said, well, I tell you what, I want you to deliver these. There's a convention going on. And I said, I want you to go and pile them up in a big pile and put something on them and light them on fire. And somebody will come out and walk through them. I still love the story. Tony told me the story. He was... He flying in, and they had a seminar going on, and he went and did some TV thing, and then when he came back, as he was coming up to the hotel, they were setting up the thing with the firewalk and out in the parking lot, and as he got there, there were fire trucks out there putting the fire out. And apparently, the guy who was the head of the hotels had been gone for a month on vacation. When he got back, there was a big fire, and so he called the fire department and put it out. Personally, I think that guy had a good decision strategy. You know, to me, I told Tony I would give a little talk in his course, and he had me come out and do an afternoon, and I got in a day early, and I'm sitting in my hotel room looking outside, and the weirdest thing is out there. There was a big circle they dug with a tractor in the sand, and they put polyurethane plastic down, and they had gigantic things of margarine, and it was like a circle, and then it went up into a big hill in the middle of the thing. It looked like a frying pan, but it had a center where it came up, and they had big things of margarine on it. And then suddenly all of these people came out of the seminar and threw themselves into the frying pan. Now, this is in Palm Springs. It's 120 in the shade, right? And here are all these people flopping around in this frying pan, right? And I thought, now, I don't get the point of this. But I'll tell you, it does explain why the UFOs don't land when they come by. You know, first they go across the beach, and there are people out there, and they're like, you know, basting them and turning them over and basting them again. Then, of course, they go across the coast of California, and everybody's boiling their neighbor in the backyard. I mean, they must think we're fucking cannibals, and they go, look at that. They're cooking each other. They're freeze-drying each other. And now look at this. They got Crisco, and they're cooking them in Palm Springs. Cannibals, we ain't landing there. We'll go somewhere safe, like Alabama in the woods. Find a higher life form, like Melvin. Actually, we're going to have a UFO hunt here. I've got a plan. What we're going to do is we're going to get a big thing, and we're going to put cow ears out, right? And a big sign that goes, Coke goes better with cow ears, and lure these aliens out, and then we're going to go out and put sacks over the top of them and take them back and plant transistors up their ass. By the way, you'll be happy to know that I've been given credit for another miracle. apparently the UFO abductee people, one of them, who is this shrink that has all these abductees, came up and asked me, he said, well, you know, I have people who are abducted by aliens. And I went, cool. What do you want from me? And he said, well, he said, you know, he said, these aliens keep coming back and abducting this woman, and it's terrible. And I said, well, tell her, you know, to put her in a trance and give her a post-hypnotic suggestion that if any aliens come in, reach up and rip the fucking mask off of them, because that's why they're wearing one. Without it, they won't do any good. And I said, then they'll go away. But make it so that it's an involuntary response so that there's no way they could stop her from doing it. It's a total thing so that, you know, put her in a trance, test it, have people come in her mind as aliens, and it's just an involuntary response. She can't even stop her arms. Well, then one of my friends came up and handed me a magazine, and apparently they'd found now the way to fight off the alien abductees, and I was given credit for it. Thank you very much. I was just kidding. You know, but apparently if it works, what the hell? I don't know if they're really abductees or not, pestering people. It seems kind of petty to come all the way from outer space and pick on someone. I don't know what it is, but they go, it's that person right there. We hate that person. Let's grab them and bring them up to our spaceship and stick transistors up their nose. These are aliens with a lot of spare time on their hand. That's all I can say. What we need to do is give them a purpose. It's kind of like most of the people I meet. You know, they have enough time to feel bad about things and complain about things. And they list and list goes on and on and on. And then I always ask them, I go, but what do you want? And they always look at me and they go, what do you mean? And I go, well, look, you know, I don't care what you don't want. You obviously got far too much time on your hands. But, you know, if I get rid of one problem, you're just going to make more. So you have to tell me what it is that I can do that will be useful. You know, how are you going to know what it is? And it always turns out, in the end, that what they want to do is feel good and make better decisions. But they don't know how to just start, take a good feeling and whirl it till it becomes something that... See, now what happens is when you start doing this, see, like I noticed he's already been sneaking off by himself. It's like every once in a while he goes, well, what else scares me? Because once you learn to turn your fear into something that makes you feel stronger, then you start wanting to know what you can do with all your other fears. Then you can become really strong. And then if you add to that like really dramatic music, and then how about some good voices? Most of you have really weak fucking voices. What you need is like, you know, 300 black people in a choir going, hallelujah. Get your ass out there. It's like, you know, hey, if you have such a fetish for cold calling that it's absolutely undeniable, you can't walk by a telephone without dialing it, right? It's like, what do you mean we're out of client lists? Give me the phone book, damn it, right? Because think about it. People, for fun, jump out of airplanes. Excuse me. You know, what you tell them, they go, oh man, skydiving's the greatest rush. Yeah, throwing your body 2 miles down towards the earth at an ever-increasing accelerating rate, yeah, that'll give you a body rush. But I think you could get just as strong a body rush anytime you wanted. It's your body doing it. It's not the altitude. It's not going towards the earth. It's knowing it. And you can get your body to create all kinds of amazing things when you want to by design. Or you can go to therapy for the rest of your life. It's up to you. Anyway, I think we should take a little lunch break here. How long do they need to eat lunch here? Like an hour and a half, is that enough? Yeah, I want them to go outside and get conscious for at least a minute. They're all going, and I'm not in trance. Wait till you walk out of this room. And they'll suddenly go, oh, I feel funny. But nothing compared to how funny you're going to feel. But make sure that you look both ways before crossing the street. The trick is I want you to become more alert, and I want you to hear more. Because there I am on the airplane, sitting there, bored out of my mind, little kid across the aisles there, and his mother says to him, eat your peas, they won't kill you. And I looked at him, nodded, and I went like that and fell, boom, down on the floor of the plane. Now, having done yoga for years and stuff, I slowed my heart rate down to about 8 beats a minute. Dropped my blood pressure way down, and some guy went over and put his hand on my throat, put a mirror in front of my mouth, and he went, he's dead. And the mother swatted the peas off the plate. And I sat up and went, what happened? And the mother went, it was the peas, the peas. And I said, oh, no, it was another vegetable intervention. It's not what you eat. It's whether or not your system metabolizes it in a way that's useful. And, you know, when you make people eat peas that have been cooked for 4.5 years, I don't think there's any nutrients left in them at all. My mother couldn't cook at all. Actually, she had trouble boiling water. She would put it in the pan and go away and come back the next day, and it was always gone. But she worked in a restaurant, so it wasn't a problem. My wife believes that the thing you cook with in the kitchen is called a telephone. Hey, it works for me, believe me. You know, it's I'm the first one to disconnect any appliances when my wife is around. But we live in San Francisco, waiters on wheels. Any restaurant in town will deliver you food. And with a guy in a black tie, they set it up. You know, it only costs you $5 extra for delivering it. San Francisco's a small town. Before they had that, and in most places, I'll call up restaurants that don't deliver and make them do it. You know, I go, what do you mean you don't deliver? I said, well, I don't want you to deliver for everyone. I just want you to cook this meal and bring it over to my house. I said, if you don't want to deliver it yourself, call a cab and have them bring it over. I said, but I am in a hurry, and we don't want any cold food, so it needs to be done promptly. I said, otherwise, I will tell everyone the truth about you know what. I didn't say I knew what. But boy, I get more stuff with that. You know, okay. Yeah, but you promise you won't tell anybody you know what. And I went, okay, I promise. I don't know what's going on there, but I guess a lot of people have secrets. I can't imagine what they are, but I'm not any good at keeping them. I always tell everybody everything, you know, inappropriately so. That's why my in-laws don't speak to me. they used to, but I didn't like it, so I put an end to it. Well, it was something about, you know, they felt obligated, since I'm in this business, to tell me something that was entirely very personal, so I published it in a newspaper. And given that my wife's father is like, works in Washington, D.C. on this, what's that, Atomic Energy Commission, something like that, and when they tell you things, you're not supposed to tell everybody. And he said, no, this is just between us. And I said, well, just between us and everybody on the planet. He thought I was kidding. But no, I don't think secrets help people. I think if you don't keep it a secret from yourself, why make it so other people can use it against you? Clinton's biggest problem was that, you know, when he took office, he didn't say, and this is the Oval Office, and this is the blowjob room. Because I don't know about you guys, but when somebody has control of nuclear weapons and determining whether or not our children go to war, I just assume they weren't stressed out because they haven't been laid too long. I think a few blowjobs is in order. I think all political figures should spend their time getting blowjobs rather than killing each other. And we should start with this, you know, so damn insane, you know, constantly, you know, because what does he care if we blow up his people? You know, if we don't, he will anyway. To me, I like that Gaddafi duck thing, man, where they showed on TV the pinpoint bomber going up his driveway and putting the bomb right through the fucking window. He said, if you cross the line of death, we will destroy you. But he had French missiles. Excuse me? Has anybody here ever owned a Renault Dauphine? The first missile missed by 54 miles. The second one missed by 52 on the other side. And he wasn't shooting at a ship, he was shooting at a fleet. Now, when you can't hit a fleet, you know, the last ship on this side you missed by 54 miles, I think you should check out a new arms dealer. But then the next thing he knew, this thing, by the way, have you ever noticed Gaddafi, by the way? Every interview, this fucker's sitting on the same tractor, in the same field, in the same position. You ever notice that? See, I notice these things, and that's because first thing he did was he kicked all the Indian people out of the country, and they were all the repairmen and all the middlemen to supply parts. And so if something breaks in that country, that's it. Your refrigerator breaks, throw it out in the backyard. It ain't going to be fixed. So it's been a lot of years, so now nothing works. So for years now, the reason he's on that same tractor, and the field is always plowed, but it's plowed by hand before they do the interviews. That tractor has not moved. Go back in your old Life magazines and look. Okay, here's a guy who makes it so nothing works in the country. He anoints himself a colonel, right? Took one bomb to shut him up, right through the fucking window. As soon as he knew we could hit his house, that was a whole other story. So I think any time a guy goes on TV and starts mouthing off, it's time for the Star Wars program. I think a CO2 laser, evaporate them on national TV. And then say, now, who wants to take his place? Because you better come up with good ideas and be nice. Otherwise, see, I don't believe in this impeachment. I believe in incineration. I've been discussing it with gods recently. I think that it's time we stepped in and got some sanity. I don't care if the president gets a blowjob, but I do care if a national figure like Ken Starr invades everybody's privacy, intimidates people, and actually they found out now the reason he didn't mention Whitewater is that Whitewater witness was paid off to say all that stuff. See? The fact that there's dirty politics, ooh, you mean this is not new, gentlemen. This has been going on since the time immortal. I mean, way before Caesar got stabbed in the back. I mean, people have been doing this crap all along. But it's time now, because now that we have the internet, we have access, we've got video cameras. The thing is use your power, write your congressman daily. They hate it. But you know what? They count those things. 600 things come into a congressman, it'll change his vote. So it's time we started saying trees good, sewage bad, right? The San Francisco Bay is now so polluted that there's no way you can fish in it and eat the fish, because they kept saying it's even though it's so dangerous that you can't eat anything in it, it's still at acceptable levels. Lake Erie up here used to be so polluted you couldn't even see in it, and now somebody's going to sell bottled water from it, I heard. I'm not quite sure about that, but, you know, in New Orleans, they figure anytime you take a drink of water, it's already been through 6 people. So I don't know about you guys, but I may not drink Perrier, but I definitely now travel with my own water treatment plant. I went to India. Everybody scared me about all the germs over there. I was in India. I never once had any problem with the food. I got back to London, stayed at the best hotel in London, got food poisoning the first day. This makes you wonder, because you know what does it is that if people don't clean things, and the English don't know anything about cleaning, the Indians know about germs. They know how to clean something. When you look at it, it's actually clean. You know, and in England, they go, yeah, it's clean. And you look at it and go, you mean it's clean? It looks like it's a derelict. And they go, oh, yeah, but, you know, we wiped it off. We wipe it off every day with the same rag. Right? Well, we get a new rag every month or so. You know what I mean? Like, we can remember it because it's the same day we take a bath. I do seminars over there. I actually have to tell the people they have to bathe every day, because when you start doing the things we're doing, it's going to make your metabolism start to accelerate. All kinds of things are going to come out through your pores. So make sure you keep your pores clean and drink lots of water. And remember, when you leave this room, everything that changes inside you is going to go with you and begin to accelerate. Basically, what I'm telling you is it's too late. And I'll see you in an hour and a half. I think somebody who looks like me would get hired to go to IBM, you know. But it's funny, you know, I went in and there they are. They're all dressed in little uniforms. You know, they all buy their suit at the same place, have the same tie, same shoes, you know. And when I went in and I said, did they actually hand these out at the door or, you know. But when I walked in, they were showing me their facility. They took me around and they brought me in probably what I think is probably the biggest clean room I've ever seen. Huge, and they have big Kennedy tape drives going wild and, you know, big stuff all glassed in a thing, you know, that's completely sealed off so that there's no dust or anything. And there are, like, no humans in there. And then there are people on the outside, and it's glass all the way around. And there had to be, like, 500 computers in there whirling away. And the guy said, and took me in, and he points to the glass. And I went, great. And I put my hand on the glass, and everything went dark in the whole room. The lights went out, everything. You know, all you could see is little red lights going ding, 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 ding. And suddenly these doors slam shut in the clean room because they do this thing like if there's a fire, right? They shut the doors and suck all the air out so that the computers won't burn out. It's not the room to be in a fire. A friend of mine worked at a place like that, and you had to sign a thing because if there was a fire alarm went off, you had 15 seconds to get out of the clean room, or it didn't matter if there was a fire or not. There'd be no air, so you'd be dead anyway. And he's the kind of guy that went, well, that shouldn't be a problem. He used to work in my lab, and he had a white lab coat, and you knew his from everybody else because it had burn holes all over the place. We were making laser holograms, and this guy lit himself on fire on a regular basis. It was like every time I come in, I go, I smell something burning, and they'd all look at me, and I'd go, it's Kent again, isn't it? And they go, well, he was setting up the lasers, and we told him, you know, because all you have to do is turn it way down so it's not really burning that bright. Set everything up, and then when you need to burn a hologram, then they can turn it up. But he never got that concept, you know. He would, like, turn it all the way up so you could burn a hole through a brick, right? And then he'd start adjusting the mirrors, and it would bounce here or there, and the next thing you know, his ass would be on fire. And I always ask him, and I'd go, Kent, wouldn't it make more sense to, like, you know, do this at a lower power? And he'd go, yes, but you don't get the full effect. I said, no, that's right. You have to skip the smoking ass then. Somebody did ask me, came up and asked me the question about somebody else's workshop, and I'd like to say this out loud. If you're really thinking of going to somebody's workshop, talk to people who went to the workshop. I don't really go to NLP workshops, so I'm kind of like the worst person to ask. I can only tell you, like, I like this person, and this person, you know, over here seems to be having people come into my workshops that sort of have everything backwards. I could tell you that. I get a lot of times, I like to ask groups, if somebody says I'm depressed, what do you say? And I'll have a room full of people go, about what? And I'll go, no. And they'll go, no, we paid $5,000 to learn to do that. And I said, well, the trick is not to be trained like a SEAL, right? You know, it's not that you go, you know, and I'm depressed. About what? Arr, you know. The trick is to think about where you're going. Now, especially with DHE, because we're going to do the first part of what I consider prep. If you can get this prep thing together, then the rest of it's really easy, because what you're going to do is I want you to find somebody in here who you don't know, who is stranger to you, not stranger than anything weird, just stranger than you. In your opinion, because what I want you to do is what we call elicitation. And I'm going to have you ask a series of questions about the most primary functions of what humans do. Humans, primarily, the most important thing I think they do is make decisions. Now, they have to motivate themselves, and so there are going to be things, for example, if you're in here, that you're more motivated to do than others. And, I mean, to me, like, you know, my idea of a sport, I like fishing, but I don't fuss with the hook because sometimes the fish bite it and interrupt your whole vacation. I just like riding around in the boat, and I mean, that's fine with me. It's like if I want to catch the fish, I go under the water, hunt them down, and kill them. To me, that makes more sense. The idea of dragging string through the water, hoping the fish are clever enough to find it, seems like a sport for fish, not for people. But I lived in Hawaii, and there's not a lot to do there, as it turns out. I got to the point where I was sanding telephone poles down just to make them neater. I'm a bit on the hyperactive side. I really thought I could retire and relax, you know, and just, you know, sort of write a little bit. But I could only listen to so many stories about fish, and then I began to think they must be metaphors because life couldn't be that boring. But I was wrong. As it turned out, I'd get so bored that I'd just go to the airport and get on a plane and go somewhere and try and find somewhere that was a little more interesting where people did things. Like when I went to the library, I'd never seen a library that didn't have any books in it. And the place that I lived in Hawaii, they built a library, but the librarian, I went in and I said, is this like a brand new library? She said, oh no, this library's been open for 15 years. And I said, well, you have magazines. I said, where are the books? And she said, well, we have some. And I said, some? And she said, well, we don't really have much call for books. And I said, in a library, who would have a call for books? They had, like, paperbacks from the supermarket and magazines. And then they had a few, you know, things like Catcher in the Rye, The Tropic of Cancer, anything that had a tit in it. But then when I finally moved away because I just got too bored there and the temperature didn't change enough for me. I need, you know, it to like get cold and hot, and not too hot. I don't like that stuff. We've had too many heat waves for me recently. I mean, it was last summer when I was in L.A., even for L.A., it was like 115 degrees every day. The sun relentlessly shining down. People in Palm Springs, it was like 125. People were like dying inside their trailers trying to get their air conditioner to work. You know, I mean, to me, that prefabricated modular dwellings, you know, if you have wheels on it, I would have hooked something up and gone away. That would have been my thing. I mean, I just stayed inside and I'd get out and I'd go over to where the seminar is and go inside. And you went out on the street and walked down the street, you could get like five blocks and you'd be sunburned. And it was like that all over the country. It was hot, you know, except some places it's also humid, which I don't like much either. I sort of like it in that terrain. I remember coming here to Chicago once and getting snowed in, right? And I was in Hawaii and not thinking that, gee, it's January, you know, just slipped my mind. So I walked on the plane in my Birkenstocks and my T-shirt, got off and, you know, and I stepped outside of O'Hara Airport. Suddenly I looked and like that, and I made my way over to a taxi and jumped in, and I was like, blah, 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 blah. And the guy turned around and he said, well, I don't know if we can make it into the city or not. And I said, he said, because this blizzard is terrible and there's a forecast for frozen fog. I'd never even heard that one before. I went, frozen what? And he said, frozen fog. And I just, you know, put images in my mind. I thought, what is it? Suddenly, because I live in San Francisco, the fog is very thick. If it froze, you know, that would be it. We'd all die. But apparently it's some kind of sludge. They've named that. You know how weather people are. They try to make it all more important than it is. They're far too happy when something bad happens. This hurricane just thrilled them. You ever seen in the news? They go, yes, and we have decimation of 10,000 people. And to me, these news people are just too happy when something bad happens. They need to enjoy pleasant things. For example, when I was in London, I found out that one of the taxi cab drivers picked me up every day to the seminar, and then he wasn't there one day. And I thought, gee, where is he? And the guy in the door said, well, you know, he handed me this note, and the guy said, I'm sorry, you'll have to get somebody else to drive you. He said, I've gone to Disneyland. You know, they built one in Paris. Not that many people go to it, but just doesn't seem like the place for a Disneyland, does it? But 100 taxi cab drivers had taken families of kids who have really fatal cancer, you know, and they're in chemo treatments, and so they're just not really that mobile. They took them, their whole families, drove them in taxis to Disneyland, wheeled them around in wheelchairs all day long, the whole family, fed them everything, and then drove them back to London. And so when I found this out, I got every single newspaper and looked in it. Not a word, nothing on TV. And I thought, look, somebody does something good and nobody even mentions it. You know, they were too busy telling us about where my president's dick had been. And so I called up the local paper there. There's several of them. And I looked and there's the real conservative one. I said, they're not going to say anything nice. So I called up one and I said, there's a rumor that something is in the water. It's some kind of a drug. And people are acting, and they're out there doing random acts of kindness. There's no explanation for it. You know, hundreds of taxi cab drivers took, you know, children, you know, and I left this message, and sure enough, in the newspaper, you know, CIA experiments on water supply. Only somehow or other, it caused the cancer in the children, and they left out about the taxi cab drivers. And this is because of the strangest thing. When you spend how many years in school, even if you're a fucking dropout, they get you for a number of years, you know, 12 to 16, and some people 20 to 25 years of going to school, and from morning, noon, and night, what do they point out? Do they mark all the words you spell right? Mm-mm. They mark off everything you do that's wrong. They train your brain to go, what's wrong? Go to the doctor, they go, what's wrong? I've met therapists, who wanted to have lunch with me. And they don't say, well, you know, what's the most exquisite thing you've been doing recently? They go, well, you know, you have all these techniques, but there must still be things wrong with your life. And I look across the table and I think, yes, there is. But maybe we shouldn't go into that now. To me, that if you can get your mind, see, even if you ask people, if you say, stop right now, close your eyes, and find out which part of your body feels the best. You know what people do? They go inside and find what hurts. It's not this, it's not that, it's not this. Well, my neck's too tight. They don't have a way of even jumping to what feels the best. Now, if you ask them what feels the worst, bang, they're right there. If you ask people, well, you know, what's wrong? They'll go, well, they'll go to this extreme. How many of you do body work in here, any kind? Right. If you work on somebody and you do really good work, when you see them the next week and you say, how's it going? They'll say, well, it's been really good. You know, I, even though I was paralyzed and couldn't use this arm and was in excruciating pain, it's a lot better. But, you know, if I lay down like this, right, it still hurts my neck. This is, I'm telling the truth, aren't I? This is exactly what you get. And you have to sit back and go, why are they laying like that? Well, it used to be the only way they could sleep that was comfortable. And they, you know, don't realize that when you feel better, instead of doing what you do where you go, well, I can't push it this far because it still hurts, you have to go, well, the damage is gone. How good can I make it feel? But we're so suspicious, especially in our society of good feelings. They're spending billions and billions of dollars to get the positive, mind-altering effects out of pain control medicine. Because the idea that you take a pill and it makes the pain go away and gets you high, they don't like it. They don't like the idea that you enjoy removing pain. They go, bad, wrong. So they're making synthetic things that can get rid of the pain and, quote unquote, have none of that unpleasant side effect of allowing you to enjoy yourself. Right? Because if you do that, you might get addicted. Not that you wouldn't get addicted anyway. I mean, crack is a marvelous drug. You can feel bad the first time you take it and be addicted. These were chemists that knew what they were doing. You know, they designed these things so that they would have this effect. In England, you know, like you can go up and buy codeine over the counter, and you can buy paracetamol over the counter. But in this free society, we have the FDA, or what I like to refer to as the foolish, demented administration, because constantly they're making it so that people do studies, statistical studies, to find out things. And I found out that one of the things they did is they finally, after a certain number of years, allowed people who were dying of AIDS to have access to certain drugs because they found out it would save their life. And they had known this for 10 years, which meant people were dying for those 10 years so that they could be sure there wouldn't be any harmful side effects. I watched them on TV saying this because somebody said, well, shouldn't you have just released these drugs? These people were, you know, dying. And they said, well, wait a minute. You know, we had no idea if there was going to be complications. Like if you lived, you know, there might be a side effect. Better you just die naturally, as if it's natural to die, you know, when there's a way to live. See, to me, I was just talking to somebody. They found out that some people with terminal cancer apparently can get rid of it by chanting. And so much so that they're going to do now a study to prove what they already know is true, that they've had a number of cases of this over and over and over again. Now, I don't know about you guys. If I could hum a tune for 36 hours and make a tumor go away rather than getting irradiated, I think it's worth a shot, don't you? You know, I'd be willing to sing like anything, soap commercials. I wouldn't care. I mean, I've had clients that have come to me that have been through everything, and it amazes me because, you know, they have to be at the end of their rope. People do not come to me first, by the way. I'm not like, I'll go to the maniac. I've only had one client, by the way, that came to me first. And the reason was because where they worked, the two people that owned a theater, it's a theater in San Francisco, and she's like runs everything, and it's owned by two guys who every day go to their psychiatrist. And the reason she came to me, she had read like Frogs into Princess or something, and when she knew she needed to do something, she said, but every day they come back worse than the day before. And it's been going on for 10 years. And she said, I was more afraid to go to a therapist than I was to have the problem I had. She said, finally started to go, it's a pretty good problem when you consider the alternative. And she said that, you know, what she liked is my thing is I don't think if you can't do it, you know, in 4 to 6 sessions, I don't think you can ever do it unless you learn something new to try. I mean, to me, the thing is I know human beings only learn quickly. If I drew a stick figure, can you kind of, there's a little echo here. Maybe you could kind of get it off. I'm just kind of picky that way. I like it flat, so when my word stops, the sound stops with it. But if I took a pad and I drew a stick figure on each page, such that if you flip through it, whoosh, the stick figure gets up and walks across the room. But if I hand you one of those a week for 5 years, and at the end of 5 years go, you're going to go, yes. And you go, what is the pattern? Because, see, the human brain learns by things going by quickly, not slowly. This is why you take a baby with no degrees, no previous education, it learns a language, and if it grows up in the right culture, like in Tahiti, kids will grow up and they'll learn to be fluent in 5 languages before they go to school. Now, I don't know how many of you took a language in school, but it took them years to be able to, even though I could speak the language, to get me to be able to write it down. To begin with, they pissed me off. They said, this is printing. And I went, cool. And as soon as I got it, they said, we're not doing it anymore. You have to write cursively. And I said, fuck you. And I said, that's a curse, isn't it? And I said, and I know another kind of curse. We'll get to that later. But, I mean, to me, it really pissed me off. And now most kids really, more than needing to learn to write by hand, they really need to learn to type. And I think it's very cool that all these kids are getting all these computers and all this stuff. Because pretty soon, because see, I've thought for a long, long time that the real solution to the educational process is not to pour more money into the school system. That's not what they need. What they really need is for us to videotape. Didn't every one of you had like 1 or 2 good teachers? And they're different subjects, but it didn't matter what the subject was. I mean, I had a history teacher, and nobody ever missed that class. Everybody was there because the guy was mesmerizing. And he just brought everything to life. It was just totally great. But the rest of my teachers, it's like I couldn't even remember their names if my life depended on it. We played a little game one day. We sat there, a whole bunch of us we were there because we had been given awards. I finally found out what these awards are. It's a way to get you to work for free. That's what they are. You know, you win an award, well, you have to fly there. You get to pay your own airfare, right? And then you get to go and give a lecture for a half an hour or an hour at some dinner, and then they give you the award, which means you then go and you've paid for airfare, you've paid for your own hotel, and you got to work for free. And they give you a little plaque. Pretty sneaky, I think. And Gregory Bateson at the time was there, and Buckminster Fuller was there, and we were talking, and we were trying to see if we could remember in college the names of all the people we took classes from. And it boiled down that every single one of us pretty much could remember 1 or 2. And they were the ones that really taught us something. And most of the rest of them, we'd like go through and we go, well, we know we took this many classes. We couldn't even remember what the classes were and who taught them, what they were about or anything. Yeah, I'd shut that off if I were you. After all, it's only your sexual future that depends on it. Yeah, well, that's really what we need is for an anchor to fire off in just the wrong time. Then later on it fires off and does the same thing again. Or my favorite now, people are when they grow up, want to be telephone booths. This confuses me. I don't even like the telephone in my house, right? I'm the person that has no tape in the answering machine. The thing goes on and goes, bloop, and I go, this is Richard. I may or may not be home. You'll never fucking know, will you? And I said, and at the sound of the tone, there is no tape, so you're in deep shit, aren't you? I said, if you talk and I'm here, I may hear you, and if I'm not here, you'll have to call back now, won't you? And, you know, I leave it on so I can hear who it is, because there aren't that many people that are supposed to have my telephone number, because I really don't like it ringing, right? I've even gone in and taken the bells out of it so that if I pick it up and someone's there, that's fine, but last thing I want is something interrupting my day. And then what I did is I deprogrammed myself because I found out if it rang, I had to answer it. And that pissed me off. So I made it so that when the bell goes off, I feel really good. Right? But it drives people nuts. I'll be sitting there and the phone will go, ping. And I'll go, yeah. Do it again. And it goes, bling. People go, that's the telephone. And I'll go, yeah. And they go, are you going to answer it? And I go, and spoil it? Nah. And they go, but what if it's important? And I go, if it's important, they'd be here. You know, how important could it be, though? You know, I've got people that, you know, they can call and say, hey. You know, they always call up the guy that works for me, and they go, Richard isn't answering the phone. And he goes, really? That's new. But yet it scares him, because when he calls, I always answer. And he finally one day he said, how do you do that? And I said, well, I have to tell you the truth. You're not really calling me. And he went, what? And I said, well, I noticed this thing, and everybody else verifies it. You think about somebody, and they call on the phone. And I was watching this MCI commercial talking about how they were going to save me money. And I thought, well, you know, if I don't dial the phone, that's even cheaper. So what I did is I went through and I remembered every single time that I'd had that experience. And I went through and I took the feeling and I amplified it much the same way I did with people here till I made the feeling really strong. And then I'd think about somebody and do the feeling, and sure enough, they call you on the phone. Now, hey, you've never had it happen yourself? Have you? Well, yeah, but it's just a coincidence. Although it's a coincidence which everybody in this room has had. Mm-hmm. You want to stay stupid? That's your business, but don't put it on me. I'm going to save some money. See, my next book is going to be called Psychic Sales. I like the idea of just sitting down, plopping open the phone book and going, and suddenly somebody calls you on the phone and goes, I don't know why I'm calling. And you go, because you want a Cadillac. And they go, how did you know that? And you go, all right, well, I've already worked out the finances. The forms are filled out. There's a limo in front of your house. Hop in, come on in for a test drive. And by the way, you know that ring you lost? It's under the couch. Think about it. It's not as weird as it sounds. See, extrasensory perception. Let's examine that. Okay, I was a rock and roll musician with a very bad attitude, okay? Then I went and I worked with a lot of computers. I designed compiler languages, okay? That's where all this modeling stuff came from. They didn't have them then. Now they have designed compiler languages which are user vicious. Even programmers can barely deal with these things because they took away all the stuff in the computers and made it so you had operating systems. This basically means that places like Microsoft can make it so that if you don't do what they want, you're fucked. You know, because it's not in the chip, it's now whatever they want it to be. So they can get the universals that we're supposed to be combining, they go and make it off a little bit, so you're stuck having to get it from them. You become dependent upon the people that designed the language. It was supposed to be originally that we had universality, but I mean, you can't even get the chords to fit together. I mean, you know, I turn on my laptop. I used to program the big ones when we had cards and flashing lights. To me, I hate my laptop. It has no flashing lights. Right? Those things were Three Rivers stepper motors, because you used to step through all the locations and you could see big lights to know what was going on. And now everything is in code and code and in code, but the codes don't relate to what you're doing. It's all in early American nerd gibberish, you know, and it doesn't have to be that way. It could be very simple. For example, if we all are typing www dot, why do we all have to do it in the first place? It's so fucking redundant. They make us do this stuff that computers are supposed to do this, not us. The computers are supposed to save us time. We're not supposed to work for them. We sit around entering our checkbook in. Excuse me, right? We should be able to just have a thing where we go out and fit the things. It prints out the check and you set it in the computer and it goes through and updates everything for you. Checks with the bank, notices your outstanding things and warns you about what's going on. It's supposed to do the work, not you. And, you know, and yet they keep it's giving me these programs. I try them out, and I'm constantly having to do everything for it and then fix it because they've designed these things so that they, like, self-destruct when you try and do anything useful, right? Oh, no, you go and you operate the printer, and they go, I'm sorry, your printer driver is dead, right? And you go, well, it was there before, and they go, but it's there, but it's not there, right? Because when you turned it off and on, I like mine now turns on. I made a thing so it fixes itself. Right. You turn it on, it goes through, and it puts everything back the way I originally had it, no matter what it's there, and it goes and safely puts all the data on something where it can't get fucked with, right? And it erases all the thing, and so I have it all empty, and all of my stuff is on a big tape drive. So I have a little tiny laptop and a big Kennedy tape drive. It's not as portable as it was before. But, you know, and they say, okay, why don't you bring your laptop over? I go, have you got a truck? But then I discovered the place to store things is in the big government computers, because they don't know what they're doing, and there's lots of space. You just go in and buffer off your own space, right? And then I discovered that my bank wasn't using much of their memory either. They said, well, you know, they said, gee whiz, you know, you can have automatic thing, online banking. So the first thing is I went in and blocked out a bunch of space for myself. I said, this is Richard's space. Banks stay out, right? And I keep all, like I'm writing a book now, and it's all in there. Someday they're going to audit that and try and figure out what that all means. And since they twist it into some weird code in there, they're going to go through and they're going to try and figure out what this means about money. And when they start decoding it, and it's fiction. It's not true. It's just about stuff like demons and stuff. And but there's not one shred of truth in it. So right in the beginning it says, this is fiction. I'll write some more nonfiction later on. But the thing is I discovered, because I've been working with Robert Anton Wilson, one day it dawned on me that fiction lasts forever and science changes all the time. So the real lasting thing you can build is a story. Because, you know, everything we know about science, we're going to disprove. In fact, it's all going all the time now. Physicists now sound like Buddhist monks. I mean, but slightly more disorganized. You know, when you start talking about the characteristics of particles, you're relating their attractiveness to their charm. Because you know what we found out when we got inside of matter? We found out it's all smoke and mirrors. But yet, it doesn't dissolve. That's the weird thing about the universe. Now we've actually gone inside and found out that there's nothing there. There's no explanation for why that keyboard does not just dissolve at the molecules and come apart. However, it does. So we're back to Leibniz now. They're actually pulled that old stuff out and said, well, there's a monad. You know, there's a queen molecule that keeps telling all the other molecules what to do. Excuse me, I don't think so. I think that you just have to be comfortable with the idea that chaos has its own order. And that even though it could come apart at the molecules, and kind of is all the time anyway, it has no reason to. So that even though we're all made of different things, it all boils down to an experiment that was done. And scientists were really miffed by this. And I love the ones where they just assume that they'd never done it. Right? And there's a special way you find these. And I love them. This is the one where what they did is they grew a yogurt culture, divided it in half, put an electrical stimulation thing that could tell, like galvanic skin response tells you that there's a big response going on. They did the same thing with yogurt. And then they took the other half of the yogurt and poured milk in it. That's what yogurt eats. And when this yogurt got the milk, the other yogurt culture went wacky. Went, we want some too. You know, and there's all kinds of electrical activity. Well, they then took the yogurt culture into another room because they had it in a shielded environment, you know, with all kinds of lead and everything they could think of. And they went outside and they fed this yogurt culture. And this one here still went wacky. So they took it a mile away. This Stanford is where they did this. The mile is a linear accelerator. And sure enough, they fed this one. This one knew it was eating. And they were really scared, right? To begin with, it means that yogurt is more alert than people. And they tried, when I saw the amount of money they spent on, they tried everything they could think of to build barriers by which they could make it so that the yogurt culture didn't know what was going on. They tried every substance, mu metal, the only thing impervious to metal, things with heat balls, everything. I mean, just thousands of different combinations, but yet the yogurt knew yogurt. Now, this becomes very important down the road because I walked in, built a little thing, they fed it, and it didn't know. And they went, you know, because I was only in there 15 minutes, right? And they went, what did you do? And I said, well, I built a wall of yogurt. Therefore, there was enough absorbed that there wasn't enough left to go over for whatever it's sending, right? That if you had, because this is like, for example, radar things like our stealth bomber, when the radar hits it, it absorbs it. It's not that the radar doesn't detect it, it's that when it hits it, it goes and eats it right up, doesn't bounce back, right? That paint that they have on there, that's why those planes are always the same color, right? They can't paint them on top because it would bounce off the paint, right? And actually, it's kind of funny because when the DEA was that the drug runners went out and took that paint and painted the engine and their boats. They're really fast, you know, scarabs, 80 miles an hour across the water. And when they'd look out on the radar, there was no boat, but there was a single guy standing above the water moving at 80 miles an hour. They forgot to wear the paint, too. I just thought, when the Coast Guard guys told me, I thought that must be really, for the radar operators, really wild to see three guys about 15 feet apart, each standing above the water, flying along. That's a UFO sighting. I used to take our lasers and bounce them out the lab window, take a big wall mirror on a day, and I used to bounce the beam down 7 miles to the coast and find myself a cloud shaped like a flying saucer. And when the laser hits the cloud, because laser won't do anything, you can't see it, until it hits something. And when it hits a cloud, which is moisture, it turns the whole cloud, whatever color. So I'd turn it down to like deep purple, you know. And I'd wait just till sunset, get a nice flying saucer-shaped thing. And then I'd get the etalon, which is the thing on the end, and I'd make it so that the aperture blinked. So you'd see this purple thing off the coast of California going along like this, blinking purple. Sure enough, in the newspaper, I'd get two things. I'd get UFO sightings and religious conversions. You know, 200 people went out and were having a, you know, revival on the beach, you know, and suddenly they see this and they all decided to be born again because the world was going to end. And if I'd only known, I would have been the one to go down there and say, if the world's going to end, you must give me all your money. Because people are always climbing up to some mountaintop. Now, talk about a bad decision strategy. If the world is going to end, why does somebody need to collect money? Why does your leader say, leave all your cash with me? You don't need it. The world is going to end. I don't know about you guys. That makes me a little suspicious, right? It's like, you know, I would like to ask, like, well, if the world's going to end, what do you need it for? And he goes, I just want to remove you of your worldly burdens, right, so that your mind can be free. Let me take care of that sin for you. By the way, in different languages, things mean different things. Like in Irish, the word sin is not a bad thing. You know, like Sinn Féin, you guys have heard of that. That the Irish have a tendency to have words mean almost the opposite of what they mean in English, a lot of them. And also when I was in India, I discovered that some of the words I was using kind of had a real interesting ambiguity. And because you can tell people to go forth and sin, and it's a good thing, right? But when people listen to the tape, they would come up to me and they go, how come you told everybody in India to go sin? Right? And I said, and I tell everybody in Ireland to do the same. And when I'm in England, I tell people to write their MP. By the way, that's what they call a congressman. I'm not quite sure what that stands for, but multiple personality does fit somehow. For example, their equivalent of the Department of Defense seems to have been found walking up and meeting another male, older man, Rastafarian, that he didn't know outside a public restroom, and went for a ride with him to meet some other people in his car, and they beat him up and took his car, complete with his cell phone in the back that had Tony Blair's home phone number. And he said, now, there was no sexual things going on. And of course, me, I'm always going out to a public restroom and meeting people. like, we're all gonna believe that. And I thought, well, if he met an older Rastafarian person, probably wasn't sex, he was trying to buy drugs. And, of course, the guy resigned, and, you know, they're investigating, trying to figure out what it's all about. What it's all about is he did something stupid. He did not make a good decision. You know, you don't go into the worst neighborhoods in town, you know, dressed to the nines in your very expensive suit with your gold watch and your Mercedes and ask people to get, you know, gee whiz, let's go for a ride. And they'll go, I know just the place to go. It looks like a dead-end road, but here, why don't you get out of the car, and can you hold this while I club you unconscious? To me, that sometimes people make bad decisions.